WRCO FM 100.9 and WRCE 107.7 FM and 14.
Also become a way for Republicans to show their support for the presumptive nominee. House Speaker Mike Johnson will attend the trial today. ABC's Rachel Scott says vice presidential hopefuls have also turned up.
Yesterday, we saw Senator J.D. Vance, who used to be a critic of Donald Trump. Well, now he's one of his staunchest supporters and defenders. Today, we're going to see former rivals Vivek Ramaswamy and also North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum. They will be outside the courthouse, and later today, there'll be a fundraiser with other VP hopefuls, Senators Tim Scott and Marco Rubio.
President Biden will announce steeper tariffs on Chinese tech products today. Electric vehicle tariffs will quadruple. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's in Ukraine, meeting with President Zelensky and pledging continued U.S. support. And two people were killed in severe weather in Louisiana. There have been tornadoes reported for 19 consecutive days. This is ABC News.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Republican state senators vote today to override as many as 36 of Governor Evers' vetoes, including a bill to fight PFAS pollution. At the same time, Evers is countersuing the Republican-controlled legislature to release $50 million for a new school literacy program. Each side is accusing the other of obstruction. Liberal justices on the Wisconsin Supreme Court sound inclined to reopen unstaffed absentee ballot drop boxes. During oral arguments yesterday, Rebecca Dallet said there's nothing in the law banning drop boxes.
We operate in the law with a general concept when the legislature writes a statute that things are permitted unless they're forbidden.
The race for president in Wisconsin is expected to be close. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
With news from the center, I'm Joanne Krulatz. Flushable doesn't always mean flushable. Richland Center Wastewater Superintendent Todd Fisher is asking residents to be mindful of what they flush down the toilet.
We've had four significant backups that are causing problems to our residents, you know, with sewage actually backing up into the basements, and all four of them have been attributed to balls or gobs of disinfecting wipes, whether they're Swiffer wipes or Clorox disinfecting wipes. I guess I just want to remind folks that just because they go to the store and on the front of that label it says flushable, there's a lot of things that are flushable that can go down the toilet when you flush, but they are not treatable. And again, if you look at the heavy weave of that cloth and how that is put together, that does not disintegrate the way toilet paper or things that should go down the sewer. And once it's out there in the main, it can get hung up on anything, and it only takes one little obstruction to get that caught.
And that's what you need to know. I'm Joanne Krulatz.
The Brewers lose to the Pirates. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Pirates chipped away through nine innings to win 8-6. Pittsburgh's Brian Reynolds went 5-for-5 with a pair of singles, two doubles, and then connected on a home run.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Just had good self-talk in the box to myself and got some pitches to hit.
Brewers first baseman Rhys Hoskins suffering a hamstring injury running the bases. He's undergoing an MRI. Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
Rhys's injury, obviously he's got a hamstring. We don't know anything more. I have an MRI in the morning, you know, to lose one of our leaders. We just got Yelly back. That's a big blow. Usually hamstrings are not better in a few days. You know what I mean?
Elsewhere, the Cubs lost to the Braves in Atlanta. The final score 2-0. NBA Thanasis Antetokounmpo underwent surgery to repair a torn Achilles he suffered during workouts last week in training. Doctors say the procedure went fine, but the 31-year-old expected to miss the upcoming season. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Mostly cloudy this morning, gradually becoming sunny as we head through the afternoon today. Our high 67 with wind out of the northeast at 5 to 15. Tonight clear down to 43. Tomorrow sunshine 72 with scattered thunderstorms likely late tomorrow night into Thursday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently it's 54.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
So I have super parallel parking skills, and on the east side where I live, I will often sit on my front porch and like a play-by-play call as if it was a sport. Parallel parking to me is a sport. I'm the Stephen A. Smith of parallel parking. That should go on a t-shirt.
We'll get you one made.
Oh my gosh.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Here's a fun fact for you. The average chameleon can point their eyes in two different directions. On the other hand, the average human can't. So unless you're a chameleon, there's absolutely no way you can focus on texting and driving at the same time. So don't do it. Unless you're a chameleon.
Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time as we revisit the old Trumpster's tax returns and find out what the Chicago Trump Tower could tell us about election 2024. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up? This is
a good
recording, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop.
Right on.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that name, that same number. Hey, good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Earl. I'm back from my one day off.
Yeah, well, you played hooky from school, and you can't go out to play.
I mean, it wasn't playing hooky. It was playing.
All right, man. Holy joke. You certainly have deserved a well-deserved one day break, Calvin. A one day break.
Yeah.
One day begs for another.
Yeah. Well, one good thing that's for sure, Calvin, when Friday rolls around, you won't be saying, oh, it's. Or will you?
I'll probably still be saying it.
All right. It's Tuesday, and as always, my co-host Sandy Williams is in the studio. Sandy, you got a lot of clothes on, man.
I know. So like I said, our weather is a yo-yo, and yesterday it was beautiful, and today, of course, we're paying the price. That's the way it is in Wisconsin. You know, you pay a price for the good weather.
84 Sunday.
Yeah.
Idyllic, wasn't it, man? It was a perfect day.
Yeah, I barbecued and burned a whole bunch of hamburgers.
Because
I don't know. I lost track.
Yeah, I burned a little something myself. It was, the warmth was unbelievable. It was 84 degrees, a warm sun.
Yeah. I had some family gathered, and I suggested we sit outside, and one of my grandchildren said, it's too hot. I said, no, we're going outside.
Hey, it was the operable word. It was hot. But anyway, if we hang around long enough, it will be warm again.
Speaking of yo-yos, you know, last time we talked, we were so confident that the Wolves were going to win.
Yeah.
And then they lost two at home. I mean, I think these playoffs have become yo-yos, actually, in terms of what happens and what you expect to happen.
I think Sandy, that there is part of what the NBA does during the regular season. I can't touch you.
Right.
If I even look at you too hard, they're going to blow the whistle. Hey, what happened?
Well, you know, I suspect part of it has to do with durability. If they played all season, like they play in the playoffs, these guys wouldn't last.
No, they would not.
No way.
They would not last.
So, it's a real rough game. But, you know, I think the NBA has done a good job of managing itself into very competitive environments, because we've got all these teams who are playing now are kind of doing a job on one another.
Well, you know,
I mean, the Pacers and the Knicks are right there.
Cross body blocks are okay. Right.
Yep.
I mean,
just no hip drop tackles.
No, you know, it reminds me of the old NBA game back in the days of Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell.
When people would be draped on them.
Yeah. And John Havlicek and Bob Cousy and those guys where you could really physically control the offensive player. And I don't know, it's some of the calls are just, no calls are just ridiculous. I mean, they've got to do, because back in those days, well,
I think they have an extra referee for each game, and then they put blindfolds on all of them. so they don't interrupt play too often.
No, they swallow the whistle.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, man, didn't you just see he hit the guy across the head? I mean, not lightly, and it was kind of intentional. Hey, didn't you see the guy tackle the other guy? Well, you don't want to make that call because you don't want to disrupt. Anyway. But I am excited about tonight, Sandy. The WNBA starts.
Yeah.
And whether people want to accept it or not, I started watching the WNBA again because of Caitlin Clark. And I started watching women's college basketball because of wanting to see what all the fuss was about Caitlin Clark. And what I saw was not just a talented Caitlin Clark, a whole bevy of talented.
Well, it turns out I think people like watching games that are competitive. And, you know, the quality of basketball for women's basketball doesn't come anywhere near the quality of what's being done on the court, but they're competitive with each other. You know, I suspect if you're used to going to the Bolshoi Ballet, the Milwaukee Ballet is a long way down. But if you live in Milwaukee and that's the ballet you've got, you go to it and you love it, and it's wonderful. And I think I was thinking about this, and I think women's basketball is testament to the fact that if people are talented, are at the utmost level of their potential talent, and they're playing hard against one another, and the games are competitive, it's fun to watch. And that's really what I would say is what women's basketball is all about.
Well, and we're probably going to see the transition from where the highest paid player in the WNBA makes, I think, $200,000 a year, maybe $190,000, somewhere around there. We're going to see a transition now, not tomorrow, but because fans are going to be watching. Before, you couldn't. I remember when the Bucks had the Does. You remember we had a.
I don't.
Okay. But... well, the Bucks had a women's basketball team called the Does, and they played in the Bradley Center, a cavernous.
Yeah, it must have been empty.
Yeah, yeah. And so you would wonder, to have anybody in there. And then so I stopped watching women's basketball because nobody was coming to see the game.
Well, apparently Indiana, the Fever, I guess they're called, where Caitlin Clark went, had empty seats last year. This year they've got they're essentially selling out. So it obviously you're right. And of course, once they come and once they start paying and once there's revenue to pay the players are gonna earn the benefits. I mean, Caitlin's already got something like $5 million worth of endorsements.
$21 million.
Oh, $21 million.
Right.
Five. You're right. That was peanuts.
Yeah. No. Anyway, we got a lot to talk.
Oh,
about.
I'd have to confess one other thing. I'm going to the Brewers game tonight. I was talking about watching paint dry, and I'm going to go watch some paint dry tonight.
Are you going to be in a suite or?
No, I don't think this is a suite. I suspect they're nice seats, but not suite seats.
Yeah. So who are they playing? You don't know.
Pittsburgh Pirates.
Oh, Pittsburgh Pirates. Well, it's a pretty good game, man. The Pirates always. You must have been pretty bored.
I got a call, invited me. It was like, okay, all right,
well,
sure.
Well, Sandy, I hope that you...
I can remember. I mean, I used to even know who was on the Pirates. Like I told you, I followed baseball with the Braves. It's just that when the Braves flipped the bird to Milwaukee and went off to Atlanta, I decided that baseball was relegated to my basement in terms of interest. So, but I can tell you, now I'm just forgetting the name of the guy who hit the famous home run for the Pirates. Lewandowski? Wait.
But anyway, Mazeroski.
Bill Mazeroski.
Yeah, absolutely. Bill Mazeroski.
I knew it was Polish.
Well, you know, but you know, I will say this. I don't know. I know four Brewers, maybe five. Right?
Name them. I can name a couple.
Yeah. And,
yeah.
What's the guy in left field?
Christian Yelich.
Christian, how do I start off? I know four Brewers,
and
I
say name one.
Yeah. the second baseman is a pretty how did I forget their names already?
I don't know. There's some new guy named Rice Hoskins. Yeah. He's supposed to be good. I'll find out.
Hey, Sandy.
Tomorrow I'll pretend I know all about the Brewers.
Sandy, I think Civic Media has the Brewers on three or four stations. I think we should do a little homework.
Yeah, I'm going to start. I'll start.
Yeah, all right. But anyway, a lot to talk about this morning. Sandy, the music. The music is yours again. What is the music?
Well, about? I decided to, we're going to, walking to New Orleans.
That's
Fats Domino and a lot of other people. I decided that New Orleans, a lot of people think Nashville's the seat of music, but when you really get down to it, New Orleans has been the seat of lots of what we think of as American music, the seat of jazz, the seat of ragtime, the seat of a whole bunch of rhythm and blues at styles and artists, rockabilly. So we're going to get fed some of that today.
We're also going to talk a little bit about, this is still to me just an unbelievable thing, Sandy, that you've got justices, United States justices who are talking about boycotting
judges
talking about boycotting Columbia graduates because they protested. What is that, man?
Well, you know, the fact is they're not boycotting people who protested. They're talking about simply boycotting someone who graduates from Columbia Law School. I'd be one of them. Boycotting them because they attended Columbia University and because at Columbia University there have been lots of protests. I mean, it's to me, for some reason, America has always, number one, said that we stood for the right to protest, but then has always treated those who protest very badly, and particularly university protests. I mean, we, you and I lived through the, and I lived at Columbia at the time of the Vietnam student protests. And those students ended up performing heroism because they really had probably the greatest impact, probably the most to do with opening the eyes of America to what was going on in Vietnam and helping extricate us from that place. It took us a long time. And we went through horrors during the process, and students suffered a great deal. And however, I would say that the landslide that Nixon experienced in 1972 was in large part a political reaction to the student protests.
So 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams and you, unpacking the absurd and unethical boycott of Columbia graduates. Next up.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Every business faces challenges, but complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping shouldn't be one of them.
With USPS Ground Advantage from the United States Postal Service, you can avoid all the noise.
No more unexpected surcharges, hidden fees, or complex rate structures.
It's just easy, cost-effective, and dependable shipping. Tune your business's frequency to success and turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
As a federally licensed broadcast company, this civic media station is required by FCC regulations to accept advertising by all qualified candidates for federal office. We also accept ads from state and local candidates. We do screen announcements from issue groups and PACs and exercise discretion in airing announcements with blatantly false claims or outrageous, unfounded statements. These announcements do not necessarily reflect the views of civic media, its hosts, or advertisers, and the source of all issue announcements can be found online at our FCC public file.
News from the Center, WRCE.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with the music major, Sandy Williams. You kind of dabbled with some music when you were in college.
No, I took music one.
Music
and,
one.
And had a Victrola.
Oh, yeah. Victrola.
Yeah.
Really? A Victrola is the old ABC.
Turntable.
Yeah, with the big.
No, I didn't have that. I'm kidding.
Okay.
The big horn that stuck out. Yeah, that was.
I thought my
grandfather had one of those. No, the music that last thing was a funeral march. Now, if you've ever been in the French Quarter in New Orleans, periodically there'll be a funeral march go through and. And funerals there are joyful things. They're not sad.
So, Sandy, where are we at in this country? And this is what irritates me the most about the direction of this country and the fact that we don't want to criticize things. But in some instances, we should criticize. When you can hear this and you're not upset about the future of our nation, I don't know. You know, what's wrong with you? In an open letter to President Shafiq, 13 Trump-appointed federal judges, this is in today's The Hill, have announced that they will not hire graduates of Columbia University because the campus has become a ground zero for the explosion of student disruptions, anti-Semitism, and hatred for diverse viewpoints. The boycott, including undergraduates and law students, is irrational, self-defeating, and unethical with no redeeming feature. How bad is it? Let me count the ways. Irrational. Although the judge's letter doesn't specify, specifically mention the Columbia encampment protesting Israel's war on Hamas, that was obviously the context for their complaint. That disruptors have threatened violence, committed assaults, and destroyed property. My problem, Sandy, is when there are protests that we support and we like, that's all right. But if there are protests that we don't like, we come out against those kinds of things. I can expect that from an average citizen, Sandy, but from judges?
Well, I think it's just a dangerous trend. But for some reason, like I said earlier, we've always talked about how this is a country where protest is honored, but the fact is that we've never, as a body politic, never treated protesters very well. And you can witness movies. You can see news movies from the civil rights marches. You can see movies from the student protests against Vietnam at University of Wisconsin, at Kent State, Columbia, all across the country. And they were sieges, and it was frequently not the student protesters that precipitated much violence. They were protesting and sitting in. It was tear gas. It was the things that were lobbed at them, and it was things that happened to them that resulted in it. And much of the was seeming. And first of all, I've not seen the evidence supporting how much violence there is, or the extent to which there is anti-Semitism. In fact, I've called relatives who are—I've got a niece a grandniece who is Jewish, who goes to Columbia. I'm trying to reach out and find out just what is the sense there of the extent to which there is anti-Semitism, because we talk about it as if it's a prevalent problem. But I I'm worried very much if there is any anti-Semitism. I just don't know how prevalent it is.
But Sandy, when judges can outwardly say these kinds of things.
Well, it would be a bit like, I guess, saying you weren't going to take any law clerks from the state of Mississippi because it was a bigoted state. You know, I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, that's to lump everyone into the same category, regardless of their own conduct. I don't get it.
So the fact that our nation can descend into that being said publicly by those judges, if they felt that way, Sandy, then I could, you know, you kind of keep that to yourself, but to collectively come out and say that is what I think we all should be concerned about.
Well, I am concerned that because of the general level of sort of social discomfort that's created by an era of protests, that this is going to have the same effect that it had for Richard Nixon in 1972, which is that it's going to cause people to have a tendency to vote, and in my particular opinion, to vote on the wrong ballot.
You know, self-defeating, even if the judges were correct that Columbia was lax in responding to the encampment's disruptions, I would still be, well, bunkers to boycott the entire student body on the theory that they cannot assume the risk that anyone they hire from Columbia may be one of these disruptive and hateful students. You know, Sandy, if this is allowed to happen, you know, it's a slippery slope, that there could be other things.
Well, I see, we talked off the air about, you know, what will America be like if Donald Trump wins? And my fear is more what's already happening in America, which has to do with social norms, social conduct, what becomes acceptable in terms of how we deal with one another and the things we do. Because, you know, America is a country of laws, all right? But what America feels like to live in has everything to do with societal norms and how we behave, which is entirely within the law, right? I mean, our laws create a broad fence around within which we can conduct ourselves. Freedom of speech allows us to say many, many things, many of which are quite uncivil, many of which would not be a comfortable environment if we use that kind of language all the time. So we have a lot of freedom to conduct ourselves, and the question is within that ambit of freedom, how are we going to be behaving in the future? And we've already moved the needle in the wrong direction.
So here's a prime example. When we talk about freedom of speech, well, it all depends, because the people did have a freedom of speech if they were to use whatever language they wanted to use under the guise of freedom of speech. It doesn't mean that they should be punished and their futures wrecked or ruined. You're the attorney, it because they use their freedom of speech.
Well, that's why I say that I'm worried about social norms, because the fact is that, yeah, we have freedom of speech, and if you're obnoxious with what you say, you're going to suffer consequences,
right,
for it. There will be penalties. And so it's hard to draw laws with respect to how it is that you can suffer social consequences for social conduct. And what the judge is doing here, it comes pretty close to the line of what is social conduct, what's official conduct. But I worry about what's going to happen to social conduct.
All right, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. It's Tuesday, that means Tuesdays. My co-host, Sandy Williams, we're going to talk about Wisconsin on the other side.
This is News from the Center, WRCE. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A healthcare system serving eastern Wisconsin is working with the FBI to try to unfreeze their computers. Ascension Health officials confirmed last week a ransomware attack has frozen their computer system. Ascension isn't saying how much money the hackers want. The University of Wisconsin-Madison Extension is using a $1 million federal grant to teach the public about large-scale solar and wind farms in different communities. Extension's Sherry Gruder says communities are also urged to give feedback.
Endangered species in the area, will they be protected to what happens to the water and the wells when the land isn't being farmed for that time?
33 large-scale solar developments are in place or under development in Wisconsin. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
With news from the center, I'm Joanne Krulatz. Nathan Humphreys-Loving, a registered nurse with the Richland Hospital and Clinics, was recognized last week with a DAISY Award for Extraordinary Nursing. Humphreys-Loving has served as an RN for the organization since 2021 and currently works in the intensive care unit. Humphreys-Loving currently serves on the Nurse Practice Council as the lead nurse for the ICU. Humphreys-Loving was one of four nurses nominated for the award this quarter. Jordan Crary, Rachel Fruit, and Ashley Klingeman were also nominated. The school year is winding down for the River Valley School District. District Administrator Lauren Glassbrenner.
The end of a school year is an incredible time. The kids are so excited, which is good and bad, because they don't want to focus on learning a lot. They want to focus on being outside a lot. Our teachers are crafty people, and they really try to keep those kids engaged for these final 2 weeks. In River Valley, our final day for students is next Thursday.
And that's what you need to know. I'm Joanne Krulatz.
I'm Pete with a 60-second showbiz beat. Ed Harris will direct a script he adapted called The Plowman from the novel of the same name. Variety reports that Harris will direct a cast consisting of Owen McTeague, current star of The Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, Bill Murray, and Nick Nolte. The film is described as a neo-noir crime thriller. This is Harris's third time behind the camera, and production will start this coming fall in Montana. Neo-noirs aren't typically box office darlings, but man, are they cool. If you thought you didn't like Yellowstone before, just wait till they put out a new show based on the Rip and Beth characters. Cole Hauser, who plays Rip, hinted during a recent interview with Country Living that show creator Taylor Sheridan might have a spinoff in the works. The rumors give avid fans something to look forward to, as Yellowstone will most likely end this fall. There are also rumors that Matthew McConaughey will star in a Yellowstone spinoff. Probably should have opened with that. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Mostly cloudy this morning, gradually becoming sunny as we head through the afternoon today. Our high 67 with wind out of the northeast at 5 to 15. Tonight, clear down to 43. Tomorrow, sunshine 72 with scattered thunderstorms likely late tomorrow night into Thursday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 54.
Progressive presents 10 things on a contractor's to-do list that are harder than getting a commercial auto insurance quote. Bidding a new client, giving an accurate estimate, finding affordable materials, getting a client to pay you for work you already did, getting a client to pay you, period, securing permits and workers and tools, getting those workers and tools to work together, and finding the perfect pair of overalls. Pockets, baby. But the easiest thing on a small business owner's to-do list? Seeing if you can save on commercial auto insurance. Get a quote in as little as 7 minutes at ProgressiveCommercial.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Coverage subject to policy terms and conditions.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Next up on The Maggie Dawn Show, if you thought you were afraid of a second Trump presidency, I've got Trump's wish list of Supreme Court nominees. You won't want to miss it.
Weekdays 2 till 4 p.m.
Mardi Gras!
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams. Sandy, the music selection.
Yeah, it was Buckwheat Zydeco. This is music from New Orleans. I'm sort of hooked on the fact that New Orleans has been the seat of a lot of music. Zydeco is pretty strictly a Creole kind of French music. Not really a national trend, but I think, yeah, actually, this guy, Buckwheat Zydeco, and his group have been here in Milwaukee.
He's been around. Is he still performing?
I think he is, yeah.
Yeah, he's been around for a while. Sandy, before we went to break, our phone line's open at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, I began the conversation talking about the fact that, you know, you've got 13 judges, you know, who in Texas who have decided that, you know, they're going to boycott Columbia graduates because they did what, Sandy? They did what they had a right to do, right? They had a right to protest.
Well, it's not that they're not boycotting the people that protested. They're boycotting all the graduates of a university at which there were a bunch of protests. Okay, that's a different story.
Right.
And I think these are all federal judges appointed by Donald Trump. I think nine of them were in Texas. But to me, number one, it's kind of not an apolitical thing for them to be doing. It's quite a political thing for judges to be doing. So I'm surprised that federal judges would think it was appropriate to put out that kind of a public petition, number one. But number two, it reflects the thing I'm most worried about, which is a shift in social norms and whether or not it's permitted to decide not to have clerks clerking for you who graduate from Columbia Law School. Whether that's permitted by law or not, it's a social kind of a boycott that's a worrisome. And it's reflective, I think, of the fact that societally we have swung in the direction of social norms which are different than they used to be. The level of rancor we have, the level of name-calling we have in politics, name-calling we have societally is different, okay, than it used to be. And it creates rancor, it creates tension, and it's a huge diversion of attention. We get involved in spats in Instagram and Twitter and all these things and worrying about what people are saying, when what we ought to be worrying about is how Tom, Dick, and Mary in the middle class are fending to the problems they have.
You know, Sandy, we talked about these judges and this issue, but let's say it's in other, you know, if judges are going to take this stance, I'm sure there are other judges who have their own, you know, bone to pick. And imagine that this is multiplied throughout the nation by judges. The impact that has on the society, and I trust in the judicial system that you constantly say is the bedrock of what the nation really stands for, is what's at risk.
Well, you know, the country was built to be a place of dialogue and free speech. Free speech is an extremely important element in our democracy. We don't have Big Brother looking over our shoulder. We don't have to worry about what we say or do on the streets, in public places, because it's okay. You know, in our society and in our Constitution and in our government, this has all been built into it. But when judges start doing this, it'll have a chilling effect, you know, on the ability to exercise our freedoms.
So, Sandy, we've been at this a long time, the United States, not based, if you compare us to the longest standing nations, certainly we're the longest standing democracy, but people have had disagreements before. And it didn't get to this point.
Well, I'm afraid it has. And that's what worries me, is that it's a slippery slope. Because periodically, during World War I, we had the Espionage Act. We had Woodrow Wilson, a president who was incarcerating people for criticizing the war effort of the United States. You know, people who are in power would like to be able to throttle freedom of speech. They'd like to be able to call everybody who denigrates them publicly as being a source of fake news. Okay, they'd like to be able to take control of the news it is that people listen to, watch, and believe, and that's a problem. That's the very basic problem. And so when we end up with a society that begins to condone conduct that has chilling effects on that kind of freedoms or those kinds of freedoms, it will have the very same impact as it would have if the government was doing it. Because there's societal pressure is something that is an important constraint on conduct. I know for myself, you know, I felt quite free when I was working. All right. But I knew that my capacity to say everything that I believed and thought was constrained by worrying about what my clients might think about what I said, okay? So I was much more private with my thinking then than I am now.
So the very freedoms that make the nation what it has touted itself to be, you know, today those things are in jeopardy.
Well, of course, you know, you can see it. We've talked about it before, but, you know, people have book clubs. People talk about books. People talk about the books that are good to read. People talk about the books that are bad to read. People talk about books that maybe children shouldn't read. All of that's perfectly okay. Good. It's all part of the intellectual process. But when you go to the government and petition the government to decide what people can read and what they can't read, things that are banned from reading, now we've slipped all the way down the slope, and we've moved from social discourse to government action, and that's a real problem.
So, and
the problem is, if social discourse gets to a certain point, then those with that position will be inclined to want to move into a government position, much the way we're finding religion creeping into government because of the strong activity of a bunch of people who want to talk about their religion.
So, Sandy, do you think then, and our phone line's open at 844-967-2789. It's a fascinating discussion. So then do you believe that, for instance, this whole thing about wokeism and people jump on the bandwagon and yeah, that's wokeism. We got to do away with DEI and all those kind of things. One man's goose is another man's gander. And where do you stop with this? Right? When the pendulum swings, and it will, pendulums will swing based on who's in political power. How do we end this?
Well, it's kind of an interesting thing, because we think about social discourse as being the grassroots that will drive our politicians, okay? But what I've seen more recently is that politicians are acting like Leonard Bernstein, the conductor, and they're conducting this process of figuring out what kind of social discourse is going to be most advantageous for them. And so there's, I think, a great deal of indirect manipulation of our social discourse designed to stir us up in the manner that will create the most political potential for a particular politician or a particular political position. And so we end up with social discourse being much more strident than it need be. We end up focusing, I think, on a bunch of subjects we needn't. I mean, this whole woke concept came up because we started paying far too much attention to a bunch of issues, which if we were a tolerant society, we wouldn't even have been talking about.
Right.
And it caused us to partition ourselves into those who were woke and those who are anti-woke.
because there was nothing new that created the whole woke thing, right?
No.
That conversation and all those things had always been around. And so, you know, somebody, you know, lit the fuse, and people jumped on the bandwagon. And I don't know, Sandy, if people who have jumped on that bandwagon really know that this may be the beginning of a division inside of this nation that we may dread. at some time in the future.
Well, I think we're close to dreading it already. I think we, those on both sides of the argument, will talk about how awful the environment is that we have such strident disagreement. And this disagreement, I think, has been stirred up by those for whom disagreement ends up being a powerful weapon. And I think we should all step back and decide that we aren't going to be subject to being weaponized, and that what we want to do is have a discourse that fits within the norms of intellectual discourse, social discourse, curiosity, learning, all of the processes.
You know, I just wish that there were more people who could understand that, and we could begin to heal, because the only way to heal is through the discussion, having a discussion about these things. And so most people, you know, are worried about, are they going to be able to make the rent and food on the table? And they don't have time for these philosophical discussions that are impacting their lives and kind of creating what they're dealing with now anyway. And so, you know, it's good to have, you know, a discussion of this magnitude, because it leads to so many other things. For instance, we're talking about the fact that we've got Joe Biden, who now wants to, you know, a 100% tariff on Chinese-made electric vehicles. There are Americans who'll say, okay, that's great. There are other things he is going to, you know, kind of prevent and put tariffs on coming. We're interconnected with China. You've always said it. How is it possible that something like this makes any sense whatsoever? Now, the American people will say, yeah.
Well, so for some reason, you know, this is another one of these things that has been weaponized, but the notion of electric vehicles, okay? We went from curiosity and interest to a market phenomena to talking about Tesla and Elon Musk all the time as being a visionary in the future, to deciding that a realization that there was going to be a substantial kind of societal relocation and dislocation as we shifted from combustion engine vehicles to electric cars. But it became sort of a political process. And now what we're doing is putting a substantial tariff, making it basically impossible for Chinese electric vehicles to be imported in the United States. China has been quite successful at designing and creating electric vehicles that they can produce inexpensively. So this is going to be an inflationary as far as automobile electric vehicles are concerned. It will make electric vehicles more expensive in the United States than they are elsewhere in the world. But I think it's also just a knee-jerk, possibly a reaction to this weaponization of electric vehicles. And also, I think it's bowing to K Street and to the combustion engine lobby, which is probably driven more by the oil industry than it is by the automobile industry, because the American automobile industry is rapidly on the road towards conversion to producing electric vehicles.
But also, we're going to show the Chinese. We'll show them.
Yeah.
And then America's on the other side not realizing, hey, this is going to impact us more so than we could ever imagine.
Well, this is part of the repartitioning of the world. I mean, we went from globalization, and now we're in the process of repartitioning, which I think is a dangerous trend.
All right, 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams and you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, go with it again.
Doing that again.
Hit it.
What is that? That's down from the bayou. Just a tiny thing. Yes, sir. Uh-huh.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Do you have a loved one in a nursing home? California mega millionaire Eric Hovde has some bad news for you. He doesn't think they have long to live. It's true. In a recent interview, Hovde said, if you're in a nursing home, you only have a 5-6 month life expectancy. Almost nobody in a nursing home is at a point to vote. That's shocking. but it gets worse. One of Hovde's companies is named a co-defendant in a wrongful death suit from an incident at a California senior living facility. He even referred to himself as an expert in the nursing home business. Yikes, that doesn't sound like the kind of expert we need. Call Eric Hovde at his California office, 714-730-4444. Tell him that Wisconsin seniors deserve to vote and get the care they deserve. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together Incorporated.
News from the Center, WRCE.
You don't like what the big chief say, you just chop and move fina.
Brother, brother, brother John is gone. Well, brother, brother, brother John is gone. I remember that morning, I remember it well. Brother John is gone. I remember that morning, my brother John fell. Brother John is gone. Well,
welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy. And Sandy, I want to, phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. I want a couple more minutes spent on this. Tesla among electric car makers forced to cut prices as market stalls. The U.S. President Joe Biden has announced again this 100% tariffs in a move that is likely to inflame trade tensions between the world's two biggest economies. The White House said it was imposing more stringent curbs on Chinese goods, not just auto in the auto industry, Sandy, but also, you know, the fact that this is going to be cuts that Joe Biden is also to other goods.
Yeah, he's putting 100% tariff on electric vehicles, and then he's increasing the tariffs on a bunch of other kinds of component
not
things.
Just in automobiles. He's right. Talking about to ease things from manufacturing and make it easier for American men. That can't be a good thing long-term, Sandy.
Well, an economist would tell you that tariffs are inflationary. Donald Trump is promising a 200% tariff on automobiles. I mean, if you think 100 is good, I'll give you 200. I think the repartitioning of the world's economy is a bad thing in the long run. I think the reason it's happening right now is because there is this inequality in terms of the economies. There are third world countries, there are emerging countries. And as long as that exists with globalization, there tends to be a shift of processes to other places. But you just showed me a picture of a Chinese automobile factory, and how many people were there?
Zero.
I mean, it was a complete robotic assembly line. And I think that's what we fail to understand, is that a lot of these places, like China, have a advancing technology which is actually putting them ahead of the United States in the capacity to produce things. And this tariff is only going to be insulation for a while from the pressure that will be created. And if we insulate ourselves from world competition, we might insulate ourselves from world innovation and the need to develop new capital capacity and new capital. You know, it happened to our steel industry. You know, we backed off on steel, and Korea and a number of other countries took over world steel production, and we're still trying to recover from that because we failed to move into the next level of technology with our steel manufacturing capacity. If we do that with automobiles, we could lose that. Right now, automobiles are being manufactured in China and India, a whole bunch of places, and they aren't being manufactured with lots of people earning little bits of money. They're being produced by highly technologically advanced factories.
So this false belief that if we do this to China, they're going to bring all the factories back to America and everything's going to be, right?
Well, they might build a factory in America, but it won't have anywhere near the number of employees
You mean like the 7,000 we had when I was?
Yeah, they'll have an assembly line that looks like the one in China, which is highly roboticized. But the main thing is that, you know, they'll put up tariffs on the things that they import from us in the same manner. So, you know, tariff wars end up not being good things. I said this when Donald Trump did it, and I'm going to be pure of heart, and I'm going to say it now when Joe Biden does it. And the only thing that I can say is that Donald Trump promises to do it much, twice as much in terms of the level of tariffs, the increases that he wants to introduce. So, but I'm troubled by the notion that America has decided that tariff wars are the direction we want to go.
Let's go to Nate from Eau Claire. Hey, good morning to you, Nate. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for the call. You say what, sir?
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. I appreciated Sandy's point about the federal judges and the shifting of cultural norms. I think my bigger concern for the federal judges, my gut said these judges should be removed from the bench. I think I have a bigger issue with the fact that federal judges are treating these students from Columbia University as guilty before even attempting to prove them innocent, assuming they've been part of these violent protests without any basis in fact or even looking into anything. And I think their judgment is a little bit suspect if they're assuming these students are all guilty of participating in these protests, which, as you said, are their rights, but assuming them guilty before even before giving them a look at all, I think it's just absolutely idiotic.
Thank you very much for the call, Sandy.
Well, yeah, it's not judicial. It's certainly not, and you're right that to reach a judgment like that. Number one, to reach a judgment like that and put out a public statement is really to sort of trot onto the edge of the political scene, which is something the judges are really forbidden from doing. So, yeah, I think the whole thing is very unseemly, but it reflects, I think, the extent to which our social conduct has become much more reckless. We are acting in manners that we didn't used to act, and the thoughts that we used to have privately are now okay to speak publicly about. And, you know, some things are better left unsaid.
But there's no question whatsoever, and you especially would think that judges would be careful to not throw their opinions around in public, right? I mean, the average Joe in the bar having a beer, I understand that, Sandy, but shouldn't a judge be at a higher standard than that?
Well, hopefully, but you know that's another one of my worries is that in the current environment, with the attack we have on our pillars of government, the judiciary is teetering, and this kind of conduct by federal judges is not going to help the process of keeping judges pure and unsullied by what's going on around them.
Hey Sandy, I know a couple of judges. Pure. 8-4-4-9-6-7-27-8. I'm sorry, are those judges that I know. I'm not talking about you.
Yeah.
844-967-2789. It's Tuesday. I mean, it's Tuesdays with Sandy Williams. We'll be talking about why you love living in Wisconsin. 844-967-2789. Next up.
This is News from the Center, WRCE. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, executive producer Luke Mathers joins us at 10:33. In hour number two, what would a second Trump term mean for your health care? Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You want to feel important. You want to be a part of something bigger, something that matters and can help change things. You want to feel like you belong. We know. We felt that way too. And that's why we did something about it. We aren't just Army National Guard soldiers. We are normal people just like you. And together, we can make a difference. Take on your legacy. Visit NationalGuard.com to find out more.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center.